welcome back to another episode of 50/50 Unplugged. We are Lindsay and Lindsay, co-founders of 50/50 Future, which is a diversity and inclusion training and consultancy company. For this episode, we have caught up with Jamie Gamble. Jamie is a partner in the employment team at Ward Hathaway, and he has specialised in employment law since 2002.
We've been chatting to Jamie today just to understand what those changes are coming into play around the sexual harassment law on the 26th of October and what that means for organisations. So what it is, what their expectations are, and hopefully give you a bit of guidance around that. We've chatted a little bit around some of the challenges that people might be facing with bringing some of those measures into place and what that looks like for them and what challenges actually arise in organisations around sexual harassment and those kinds of behaviours and how to mitigate them. So it's really hopefully going to be a bit of a guide to help you mitigate some of those risks in behaviour and how to put things in place to make sure that you're doing the right thing in time for the 26th of October and beyond.
Expect lots of practical strategies and not loads of legal jargon. Jamie's an absolute star. Hopefully you'll find it useful. Enjoy. So good afternoon. Thank you so much, Jamie, for joining Lindsay and I on our latest episode of 50/50 Unplugged. Can you do me a favor and just tell folks who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for having me. I'm Jamie Gamble. I'm an employment partner at Ward Hathaway, the team in the Newcastle office. And yeah, I've been doing employment law for probably more years than I can really remember, but I think it's been 22 years.
You know your stuff, Jamie, don't you then? No pressure.
Well, experience helps.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And obviously, we've got a bit of a soft spot for Ward Hathaway because we've been working with you folks recently from a diversity and inclusion perspective. So the reason that we've been banging at your door asking you to come and join us is because there's a new amendment coming into effect next week, 26th. That's obviously going to impact organisations across the country. Would you be so kind as to tell us what's happening next week? What are the changes?
Absolutely. And it's probably worth me touching on the fact that it may change again now we've got the Employment Rights Bill as well, which is maybe adding some more to it. I think it's probably worth starting by saying, this is a change to the law around sexual harassment and the duty to prevent it. But obviously, the provisions in the legislation around not sexually harassing people has been there a long time. So nothing has changed in that respect. And I would hope that good employers are already doing lots of things to try and prevent sexual harassment in their businesses. This is just really making that an absolute legal duty. The way it works at the moment is that if one of your employees sexually harassed another employee, then as an employee, you are vicariously liable and you will get a sexual harassment discrimination claim in the employment tribunal, and that individual may be named as well, the person who is the alleged harasser. But you, as an employer, have an ability to argue a statutory defence to say that you took all reasonable steps to prevent it, but that is quite a difficult defence to run.
Okay.
That's the current position. What is now changing is that is all still there, but now there is an obligation, a duty on employers to take reasonable steps to prevent sexual harassment. So that's the new duty. And there are two main implications of that. Now, if you have found not to have taken reasonable steps, you still have to have a claim against you. You still need to have that claim and lose, and the compensation can be uplifted 25% for not having taken those reasonable steps, which 25% of what could be a big sum in discrimination claims can be significant.
Yeah.
And then that we now have the Equalities and Human Rights Commission now have the ability to run investigations as well, so outside of tribunal processes, if they're getting evidence that employers aren't taking this duty seriously. And I don't know if you want me to touch on the employment rights bit quickly now, or do you want to ask me? So we might dig into this in a bit more detail, but you'll have noted I said it's take reasonable steps to prevent. In one of the drafts, it said all reasonable steps, and that didn't make its way into the final legislation.
Okay.
And the new employment rights bill that came out last week is proposing to put that word all back in. So that would be an employer has to take all reasonable steps to prevent the sexual harassment. And the other sort of main change here as well, which links into that, is the new legislation that's coming in next week will also catch the third-party harassment.
Yeah.
So because you have to prevent the harassment of your employees, not by employees, of employees. So yeah, that captures them being harassed externally, albeit they can't bring a standalone claim if it's just third-party harassment. But
okay,
it can come into reckoning for the compensation, but also clearly for the enforcement by the EHRC. But the proposal that's going to come in under the Employment Rights Bill would be making it very clear that employers are liable for third-party harassment. You can bring a discrimination claim against your employer if they haven't taken all reasonable steps to prevent harassment, which that could be very big undertaking and very tricky to know how far do employers have to go when they can't control people externally. If you're in hospitality and those type of sectors, it's really tricky.
Yeah, I think that's one of the real tricky things, isn't it? It's like knowing where your remit as an employer lies and getting that balance right, I suppose, as well. Because I suppose some of the challenges that we're hearing, and that can be either from leaders in the organisation or from HR in particular, who are obviously going to have to do a lot of the legwork around this to make sure they're putting everything in place, to be more preventative rather than reactive to situations. But I think one of the scary things is, I suppose, for a lot of organisations is, well, does this now mean that we're going to have loads of people coming to us with all kinds of different, you know, claims, or and how can they get the balance right with that?
I think it's really important that this change has been made, because I think it's the fact that it's put in an absolute duty rather than just assuming employers are doing these things. I think it's important that it's, I know you have a duty to do this, but will it open the floodgates? As I said, someone still has to be sexually harassed, and we hope that that doesn't happen to anyone. But unfortunately, those things do happen, and that's part of the reason why this legislation was brought in, because the evidence was there's still too many examples of this. But you would hope by making some of these changes, surely the number of occasions of sexual harassment over time should go down. Yes, you maybe could get a spike initially where people realise they've got more rights than maybe they'd realized and take action. But as employers do some of these things, hopefully, as this legislation clearly intends, we're going to make this less of an issue in the future, hopefully.
Everybody you'd like to think.
Both
employees, but organizations too. I think it's the fear of the unknown, right? And I think that's coming into play a lot, because a number of people we've spoken with, particularly in HR functions, it's now the work that's required off the back of this to put measures in place can seem really daunting and really overwhelming. Then when you consider rewriting or updating any policies, or now pulling into practice, risk assessments and preempting and having proper paper trails, particularly for SMEs, I would argue that it's questionable whether their policies are fit for purpose in the first place. And coming from a startup background, we know how easy it is to slide with that and think about it when you need to.
But, and just like one person in HR at the most, probably in a lot of cases as well, to do that. It can probably seem quite overwhelming, but we know, like with a lot of organisations, if they're already doing a lot of good stuff and the culture's there, then there's probably not much more that they need to do. But
yeah, but I suppose when you hear comments like from the EHRC that it's going to be difficult to say that you comply with the duty unless you've done a risk assessment. It's very much saying you do need to do this. And it is based on, you know, you do have to look at the size and resources of the business. So what my business would have to do compared to a small 10-person business, you know, it'd be very different what's expected of us. But you know, every business should be able to identify and sit down and identify where the risks are. And at least, hopefully they've never had a sexual harassment issue in their business, but if they have, that's the best starting point, isn't it? Because it's what happened, what can we learn? Did we learn? Did we put all the right things in place? If not, we should do it now. And then look at where those touch points are between people and external people. You know, where are the real risk areas? You look at like hospitality, clearly it's, you know, you've got people who've had a drink, and that's the real difficult thing. It's like, well, that person might be absolutely lovely when they come in, but we know some people are good drinks and some people are not very good drinks. And how do you know when they're just going to sort of flick that switch and do something? It's really hard to predict.
It is. And again, thinking of examples of, there's some organizations we work with where there's lots of intercompany relationships, given the nature of either living on site together. Yeah. It's also, again, we had a conversation on Tuesday with a company that was chatting about, you know, a lot of their staff spend the majority of their time on client sites. So that third party piece as well, how they can protect is really at the forefront to make sure that they're doing everything they possibly can.
I think it's really significant for companies to look and notice those patterns though. So I do think it's a really good exercise for them to do, because if it has happened before, or if they've got an inkling of where it can come up. For instance, we know that especially like on digital platforms, whether it's WhatsApp or Slack or whatever it is, or whether it's nights out, away days, or whatever, you know, their company kind of migrates to in terms of how they're communicating and where that behavior is going to come from, at least they can start to notice that and be more preventative in those areas, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I agree. But at the moment, at least, well, I suppose I was going to make a point about reasonable and all reasonable. I think you have to take reasonable steps, not all reasonable steps. But if you sit down as an employer and come up with a list of steps that you think you could take, are you really going to leave some of them out and say, well, we didn't have to do all of them, so we'll just pick those ones? Because if they were easy to do, then wouldn't you do them anyway? Because whether the ones that you don't do, you would probably argue weren't reasonable, whether it's because of the cost involved in doing it or the impact on other relationships. You know, like you could say, we could do this with all of our people walking in on site. We could ask them to sign something. Is that actually a reasonable thing to do? So I think it's going to be difficult. I don't think this change at all probably changes that much, because I think it'd be very difficult to say, well, we came up with a list, we thought we'd do five of them, the other 10 so we've done some. So I don't think that probably changes a huge amount. And then it's, yeah, you know, how far do you go? So particularly with third parties, like, do you, if you have a tourist attraction, do you make everybody sign something explicit on the way and they say, you will not sexually harass our staff? It might be there in the small print, but it's not the welcome to the visit attraction that person was hoping for that lovely day out, was it? The first thing we need to say is, it's like, what, you're not like the look of me or something? It's like, you know, why am I being asked to sign it? So how far can you go? How many signs do you have to put up to say, we do not condone and accept this type of behavior?
Totally.
I think a lot of that will be about how you react to it. So you can imagine in a pub environment, as I said, you can't tell when someone's going to do it. You wouldn't, if you were scared of sexual harassment in that type of industry, you would never let anyone in the pub, because when people get drunk, unfortunately, people can do silly things. But as long as that person knows that you treat it incredibly seriously, and the moment anybody does anything, you have reported to this person and they're going to step in and deal with the situation, then that's, I think, taking a reasonable step.
Yeah. What do you think some of the traps will be that companies find themselves in? So what I mean is that, we've heard of organizations and worked with organizations where that line of reporting has not been clear and not been dealt with. So there's been no paper trails and things have got really horrible and nasty and heartbreaking for everybody involved. So that's something that we see, is when people don't know to do what's expected of them and those things aren't in place. Have you got any examples of maybe common traps that companies fall into that land themselves in hotter water than maybe they could have prevented?
Well, I think that's an important one, just expanding on that. It's that line of communication and ownership of the situation. And I think that's what really needs to now happen very clearly. And that needs to come through training that needs to be implemented. So not both that the managers know that if they see it, they need to deal with it, that they know how to deal with it in the right way, that the employee who might be being harassed knows that there is protection there for them and who they need to go to, or any other employee witnessing it knows that it's all right to say, I've just seen this and I need to bring it to your attention immediately rather than wait. I think, you know, you sometimes get a situation where someone said something to someone and they think someone else is dealing with it, and then no one deals with it, and then you've got a much worse situation. I think really properly training people to understand not just what it is, but how you deal with it. Because if you just tell people that this is what it is, but then they don't feel equipped to have the right type of conversation in a supportive way, you're going to stop people coming to you with future issues if it's not dealt with properly.
It's so true. Yeah. And we talk a lot about, you know, being an active bystander and second guessing people's reactions to certain things that are said or done, because, you know, I've definitely found myself, and I'm sure you both have, in scenarios where something's been said or done and it stings a wee bit, but your default is to laugh, or you don't necessarily react outwardly.
Yes.
In what's the word? That aligns with maybe how it stings inside. So also we should be picking up on things, and it's everyone's responsibility to get involved. And I think indifference is arguably more harmful. What message is that sending internally to colleagues when we don't act on things?
I think that's a wider sort of cultural issue in businesses and training issue. I know we've talked about this before, the wider sort of EDI piece. It's that, and it's going to take time for people at all levels to feel comfortable talking openly about this, but we have to start, and this is making it even more important that you start, and that people know what is right and wrong, but know that it's all right to say, I've seen something that I think shouldn't be happening, and that's not going to reflect on you, and that you're not going to be unfavorably treated by that manager in the future because you've spoken up against them. That people need, and that at all levels, people worry about that. Whether the person you've seen do it is someone on the C-suite or whether it's a line manager on the factory floor, you're worried about, if I say this, how is it going to hit me? How is it going to affect me? Yeah. From a slightly self-preservation point of view. And if we have to break that, don't we? It's like, no, we will treat anything like this very seriously.
It comes up quite a bit for us, especially when there's that junior-senior dynamic as well, where some people don't feel as though they can say anything, especially if it is, you know, somebody in a more senior position to them. And we see it, again, as you've said, like across the company in lots of different ways where it comes up. And I suppose for us, this feels like a really good opportunity to get everybody on the same page with that training, to give them some tools and equip them with how to deal with things in the right way. Because whenever we've done our training, I think a lot of the fear that people have around either speaking out when it's in a bit of a tricky situation might not be, they might not feel comfortable to do that, depending on who's there and how something's been said. And also, I think when it is in banter, then, you know, they don't really know how to respond. And if they feel as though they've got that type of relationship, then at what point is it not fun anymore? Or even for people who see that happening, it's still not necessarily appropriate to let it slide sometimes as well. So I think it's really important that people have got that awareness piece, first of all, of what that looks like, how to be able to intervene and be an active bystander in some of those situations, because a lot of the time people are either not wanting to say something due to that self-preservation piece, or they just don't want to get involved, or they don't know how to, or it can quite often result in that attack and defence, which we definitely don't want. It's just being able to do that in a respectful way that opens conversations, I suppose.
Absolutely. A couple of points on that. I mean, again, I know we've talked about banter before, and you know that it's not a term I like, because it generally means someone saying something they shouldn't really be saying. It's normally an attempt at fun, humor that's gone wrong, hasn't it? But we all know really what typically banter is. But we have to be realistic that we're all different human beings, and a lot of people will just still not speak up. But if we can start moving the percentage of people who feel empowered, who care about this type of thing, I'm not saying the others don't, but really care about it and actually would like to feel that they can speak up about it, and we make that easier and more obvious that they can, then we're moving in the right direction. But you know, with all of these things, it's never going to be 100% perfect, is it? But you're aspiring to something that's going to make things better for people, and try and stop as many of these issues as we can.
Definitely. I think it's really important, you know, when their companies are then looking ahead about this preventative steps that they can put in place, it's acknowledging how lots of different people would be impacted by that, and thinking about different personality types, different levels of seniority in a business. And I don't know if this is right, this would be my approach to it. I appreciate you're the legal expert. You know, how they're going to overcome those barriers between juniors challenging senior colleagues if necessary, and thinking about how nuanced it all is to try and tackle that, because you hit the nail on the head about transparency and building that culture. And it does take a very long time to be able to turn a ship like culture around and see the results of it. But I think it's totally possible to do when it's really authentic and companies are actioning on what they say, they're sticking up to their part of it and doing what they've promised. And then it naturally filters and spreads. And I know at Ward Hathaway, you folks, I think, are a very good example of that, because I know with your partners in the firm that they have a duty as part of the SRA to challenge the likes of inappropriate behaviour or language. But it's actually a company-wide thing for Ward Hathaway, and everybody's aware of what's expected of them and how they act in that. And I think that's a lovely, transparent message across the business of how things will be taken seriously.
And we've done, you'll be aware from working with us, that we've done a lot of work over the last year to relook at our values, which haven't been done for a number of years, and one of them is respectful, that's the one we're focusing on for this quarter, business quarter as well, which sort of aligns with the work that you came in and did with us. And that's given us that opportunity to really reinforce these messages that it is important. This has got to be, it's not just this, it's all the different types of things around health and wellbeing and EDI and wider, which is how do you let people come to work and be their best version of themselves and really thrive and enjoy being there. And clearly, if someone's been subjected to the type of thing we're talking about here, they're not going to be thriving, are they? They're going to be in a very difficult position and not performing.
Absolutely. I think having the opportunity where the whole firm can go through something like that, where, you know, from that moment, they know that this is the company's stance on it. It is aligned with the values of the company. So this is what our expectations are. And I think that then lends itself to giving people a kind of a fresh page to start from, to be like, this is our expectations. This is how, you know, we want to behave in the company. Mm. So it's a really good opportunity to kind of set things up in the way that it should be, in the right way, to be more preventative, I suppose. I think there's a load of stuff that comes around, you know, that respectful challenge and being authentic around the company culture, that's really going to harness a lot of this. And I suppose some other risks that we could look at mitigating would be around the more practical side of things, around policies as well. And what kind of advice would you give to companies around, you know, putting policies or mitigating any kind of risks from a legal perspective around this?
Well, I think if you have policies, and you should have policies, but if you have policies, then they do need to be looked at and updated to have this in mind. This isn't just about having a sort of sexual harassment or anti-sexual harassment policy. This is about looking at all other policies that it can impact on, you know, whether it's a social media and how you engage in social media, whether it's around going to client events or going to work events, and that it will touch on lots of those, and how you engage with suppliers and customers. And because this goes both ways as a business, in the same way you've got a duty to you, or you're going to have a duty in terms of preventing third party harassment. You don't also want to be a business where your employees are harassing other people's employees, others, and you want to look at it the other way around, because that's not a good look for any business either, is it? You really don't look like you're taking it seriously if you're not preventing it outwardly as well. Yeah. So I think there is a lot to look at around policies. And then it's obviously really important that if you put a policy in place that mentions these things, then you are very much then saying, we are going to adhere to this, because the worst thing is having a policy that says you'll do something and they're not doing it, because you're going to get beaten with that stick regularly. So it's thinking about, I think almost the risk assessment leads into everything. It's like, do that risk assessment, because that will probably tell you where there might be policies you haven't thought about that need to be looked at, because you'll be picking up on connections in different places and think, actually, we've got a policy that deals with some of that, so we need to amend that. So and then, as you've alluded to, it's in this message needs to come from the top down. And so you need to start with the senior people in the business understanding, getting it, saying that it's taken seriously, and then it's rolling that down to managers, and then rolling that out to the wider workforce. Because I think this is a sort of question people don't really know to how far you need to go, but on the face of it, really, you probably need to train everyone in the workforce to say you've taken reasonable steps, and you need to keep it up to date. Now, that doesn't necessarily need to be a really extensive training session on all occasions. You know, there might be top-up sessions, but people at least need to understand at all levels in the business what it means, what they're looking out for, what they can do if they see anyone else going through it, what they can do if they're going through it, how they can challenge it, or if they don't feel comfortable, who they can pass it on to, or are there sort of anonymous sort of websites or emails they can use as a starting point to flag the issue.
Definitely, I think that's all really useful information for organizations to be able to take away. And I know that you folks are obviously helping clients with navigating this whole thing. And you've got a whole suite of support available for organizations if they do need help with it. So we will ask you if it's okay to make your contact details known, or the firm's contact details known, in case people do want to get in touch, to just soundboard and get that advice. Because I think you've made it really simple in terms of packs that companies can access.
Yes, and I know you'll be helping businesses with some of this as well. But yeah, we've created a toolkit that businesses can use if they just want a suite of documents that has a policy, a risk assessment that they can go through, a training pack to do their own training to managers to get the main points across. There is something that is a starting point of the feel of where do we start. We've got that type of pack if people are interested in it.
Bob, fantastic. Great. I feel like I love talking about this type of stuff. I've got like a morbid fascination with the legal side of things. Not that it should be the driver. We should be doing this to just look after the people that we work with. But it's really important that when we don't say what we're going to do, that there's protective measures there in place when they're necessary.
Yeah, and obviously we'd all like to think that we could live in the world where you don't need the law to be put in place to say you shouldn't do this type of thing, but that is not the reality. But as I said at the beginning, I would imagine many employers, many people listening to this podcast will already be doing a lot of the right things.
Yeah.
And therefore shouldn't really panic too much about these changes if they've got a good culture where they try and look after people and would deal with these issues seriously. They've probably got a lot of the work already done. It's probably just going to be documenting some of this to show that they've done it and they've got a paper trail and that they've thought through all the different steps and decided what's reasonable, what isn't reasonable, and then they keep that under review and keep monitoring it. I think hopefully it shouldn't mean too much, but it's probably just a bit of process and paperwork that people need to go through, and then getting that message out around the business of how important this is and how seriously it'll be taken.
Definitely. And I think that's really, well, from a bias perspective, we obviously think that's really key that people are on the same page and they feel armed and confident to tackle things that can be really difficult and really challenging and sticky topics. The last thing that we want is that the fear of cancel culture or people being too afraid to say anything for the backlash, therefore they don't at all. We really want to overcome that. And we work really hard to do that.
And I think that's where a lot of the issues we come across tend to have an element of that, where someone has not known how to deal with it. Yeah. So a manager has not known how to properly deal with it. Not blaming the manager. They might have been on the training course, but it was quite a while ago. And I remember somebody saying about you could talk. There was maybe some steps that you're supposed to go through, but can't quite remember. But when it happens and you're on the spot, you know, if you haven't had many of those conversations, people clam up because they think, right, this is already sounds bad, but if I say the wrong thing, it's going to be 10 times worse. So am I better off saying nothing?
Opens a big can of worms then too, doesn't it? Because then you find that you have lots of different managers all doing their own very different thing, and you've got no consistency because it's all being dealt with in very different ways.
From that perspective, I think that's just a wider point, isn't it, as well, from a cultural engagement perspective, that even if it's not leading the claims, it's that thing of, oh, their manager or their treats them really well and has really good relationships, and our manager doesn't. And
we're not all
identikits, but you want at least feel there's some level of consistency around the business of how people feel they're valued and treated. And I think so much of this, we've talked about EDR, and you know I do a lot around health and wellbeing. So much of it, I just work from the basis of, if you just try and treat people right, the law almost follows that you probably be compliant. Yeah. But obviously you do need to look at the law from time to time and check the technicalities. Typically, if you go out to treat people in the right way, you normally can't go far wrong.
Oh, what a lovely note to leave.
I think that summarizes it beautifully, Jimmy. Perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoyed it. It's my first ever podcast, so I've really enjoyed it.
Congratulations. So natural.
I know. Really it.
Love that. Jimmy, if people want to reach out to you, where's the best way that they can get in touch?
Just drop me an email, jamie.gamble@wardhadway.com.
Perfect. I will link that on below so people can click straight through, and I'll link to Ward Hadaway, of course, as well. Yes. And as always, if anybody wants to reach out to Lindsay and I, they can do so on any platform, whether it be LinkedIn, DMs, or Instagram, or whatever. But we'll link 50/50, of course, too. Thank you so much. Have a fantastic afternoon, and we'll speak to you soon.
Yes, thank you very much. Bye now.
Bye.